This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Overwhelmed hospitals in the United States are converting chapels, cafeterias, waiting rooms, hallways, even a parking garage into patient treatment areas. Staff members are desperately calling around to other medical centers in search of open beds. Fatigue and frustration are setting in among frontline workers. Conditions inside the nation's hospitals are deteriorating by the day as the coronavirus rages across the U.S. at an unrelenting pace, and the confirmed death toll surpasses 250,000. The number of people in the hospital with COVID-19 in the U.S. has doubled in the past month alone and set new records every day this week. As of Tuesday, nearly 77,000 people were hospitalized with the virus. Newly confirmed infections per day in the U.S. have exploded more than 80% over the past 2 weeks to the highest levels on record. Pfizer now says that test results show its coronavirus vaccine is 95% effective. The company said Wednesday results also show it appears safe and protects older people most at risk of dying from COVID-19. It's the final data needed to seek emergency use of limited shot supplies, even as a catastrophic outbreak worsens across the globe. Wednesday's announcement comes just a week after it was first revealed, promising preliminary results. U.S. President Donald Trump will sharply reduce the number of U.S. forces in Afghanistan from 4,500 to 2,500 before he leaves office, according to the Pentagon. Announcing this on Tuesday, stopping short of the complete withdrawal Mr. Trump threatened to carry out by Christmas. Mr. Trump's decision to limit himself to a partial withdrawal was first reported by Reuters on Monday and has triggered warnings from critics who say it will undermine security and hurt fragile peace talks with the Taliban. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. A shocking military report into war crimes has found evidence that elite Australian troops unlawfully killed 39 Afghan prisoners, farmers, and civilians. Defense Force Chief General Angus Campbell says the shameful record included alleged instances in which new patrol members would shoot a prisoner in order to achieve their first kill, in a practice known as blooding. The chief was announcing the findings of a four-year investigation by Paul Brereton, a judge who interviewed more than 400 witnesses and reviewed thousands of pages of documents. Campbell said he unreservedly apologized to the Afghan people. U.S. President Donald Trump's effort to overturn projected President-elect Joe Biden's victory is shifting toward election boards that certify the vote count. The battle was centered in the battleground states that sealed Biden's win. Local officials say the moves do not reflect a coordinated effort, but instead seem to be inspired by Mr. Trump's rhetoric about fraud as state and federal courts push aside legal challenges filed by Mr. Trump and others. The devastation caused by Hurricane Iota is becoming clear as communications are restored after the second Category 4 hurricane in 2 weeks to blast Nicaragua's Caribbean coast. The official death toll rose to 16 in Nicaragua, with victims swept away by swollen rivers or buried in landslides. Iota struck Monday evening as a Category 4 hurricane, hitting nearly the same location as Hurricane Eta 2 weeks earlier. By early Wednesday, Iota had dissipated over El Salvador, but the storm's torrential rains remain a threat. U.S. prosecutors have formally dropped a drug trafficking and money laundering case against a former Mexican defense secretary. It's a stunning reversal that came after a pressure campaign from Mexico. One American official said Mexico threatened to expel the Drug Enforcement Administration's regional director and agents unless the U.S. dropped the case. But it was not immediately clear what other pressure Mexico was applying. The official requested anonymity because he was not authorized to speak about the case. The action came after Mexico acknowledged making veiled threats to cut off cooperation unless the general was sent home. Again, U.S. prosecutors formally dropping a drug trafficking and money laundering case against a former Mexican defense secretary. It is the reversal that comes after pressure campaign from Mexico, including one American official saying that Mexico threatened to expel the Drug Enforcement Administration's regional director. Find more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Thursday, November 19th. Here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. In Ethiopia, the government says that its soldiers are closing in on Tigray's capital of Mekele as fighting continues between its federal troops and the TPLF forces. And in Uganda, three people died and at least 34 others injured after protests erupted in major cities and towns. Protests started after police arrested presidential candidate Robert Chagulanyi, also known as Bobby Wine.
Our quick reaction, CCTV monitoring and crowd control dispersal teams managed to suppress the violent groups with tear gas and other non-lethal weapons. Several suspects have been arrested and will be screened once the operations have normalized.
That is Fred Enanga, spokesperson of the Uganda Police. In Malawi, the self-proclaimed prophet and church leader Shepherd Bushiri has surrendered to police in the country after fleeing South Africa, where he is wanted on charges of theft and money laundering. Now, will this help the relationship between the two countries?
We should not spoil that which is big because of just a single person, because Malawi is not going to benefit anything by protecting, for example, an individual and putting the whole system of the country in jeopardy.
Sherif Kaisi is a political science lecturer at Blantyre University. And in Senegal, Dakar's second largest art event will also be its first this year. After the Biennale was cancelled due to the COVID-19, this year's Patkul looks to fill the gap. Those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. The Ethiopian government says that its soldiers are closing in on Tigray's capital of Mekele as fighting continues between its federal troops and the TPLF forces. The war has killed hundreds and sent 30,000 refugees into Sudan. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has rebuffed calls for talks, saying that government forces will soon triumph over the local ruling Tigray's People Liberation Front, TPLF. The Ethiopian government stresses that this is a limited military action against some members of the TPLF, while the TPLF says that this is a war against Tigray. In Uganda, three people died and at least 34 others injured after protests erupted in cities like Kampala and the eastern city of Jinja. Protests started after police arrested presidential candidate Robert Chagulanyi, also known as Bobby Wine. Ugandan police said in a statement that they had detained Bobby Wine while he was campaigning in the country's east for violating anti-coronavirus measures by holding massive mobilization of unauthorized assemblies and processions amidst the threat of COVID-19. That is according to the police statement. Reuters reports that in multiple parts of Kampala, young people lit fires and erected barricades on roads, trying to block traffic and demanding the release of Mr. Bobby Wine. Squads of police and military personnel used tear gas and live bullets to try to disperse the protesters. Meanwhile, some local activists are calling for the suspension of Uganda's elections due to the violence. In Kampala, Mugume Davis Gwakarinji reports that some presidential candidates have halted their campaigns, demanding the unconditional release of Mr. Robert Chagulanyi.
Angry demonstrators, mainly in Kampala, set up illegal roadblocks, while others burnt car tires. There were other protests in other cities, such as Jinja in eastern Uganda and Masaka in the central part of the country. The police responded with tear gas and bullets to disperse crowds. Fred Enanga, Uganda police spokesman, accused Bobi Wine's party, the National Unity Platform, of mobilizing youth to destabilize Uganda's capital, Kampala.
The Joint Security Task Force shall not allow for such acts of violence to escalate into a civil crisis. Our quick reaction, CCTV monitoring and crowd control dispersal teams managed to suppress the violent groups with tear gas and other non-lethal weapons. Several suspects have been arrested and will be screened once the operations have normalized.
Presidential candidate General Mugisha Muntu, who heads the alliance for National Transformation Party and former army commander, condemned Bobi Wine's arrest and declared of suspending the campaigns until Bobi Wine was released unconditionally.
The regime needs rather. We are dealing with a very delicate situation in this country. They should really stop being reckless. Because you can do one thing and it sparks off. The problem becomes larger than what you anticipate.
Crispe Kaheru is an election expert in Uganda. He says the Electoral Commission should postpone campaigns.
Stakeholders, including politicians, their supporters, security agencies, and non-state actors, should remain alive to the reality that this is an election and not a war. An electoral process that is not peaceful is going to be very difficult to prove as credible.
Sarah Birete, who heads NGO Center for Constitutional Governance, agrees.
The security agencies have hijacked the electoral process. They are targeting opposition leaders and harassing them. There is no conducive environment for all candidates to campaign and solicit for support from the voters.
Activists are also calling on the police to release Bobi Wine and the Electoral Commission to invite all candidates and forge a way where all candidates can freely campaign. They're also trending social media hashtags, Free Bobi Wine, calling for Bobi Wine's release. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And still in Uganda, journalists in the country said that they have come under attack from both civilians and authorities while trying to cover political rallies of opposition MP Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine. Sumi Saduni is a photojournalist in Uganda who says that she and her colleagues were attacked on Wednesday. From Jinja, Uganda, she explains what happened to VOA's Jason Patinkin in Washington.
Sumi, thank you so much for speaking with us. Can you first explain what exactly happened Wednesday when you were out trying to cover Bobi Wine's rallies?
So as we were trying to cover Bobi Wine's rallies, we obviously chased the rally and then got onto a roadblock made by civilians and police as well. It was just a bit of a mess. And then as we got there, as we got to the roadblock closer with the car, we had some guys throwing stones, like big rocks, at us. So we had to do a little U-turn and just drive fast and just kind of get away from that. They were still throwing rocks at the car and we were really scared that they were going to smash the windscreen. But luckily we did get away.
And was your vehicle marked as media? Was it clear that you were journalists inside the car?
We did have clearly a media tag in front of the car, which is also tagged as COVID-19 media, which means we should be able to do our work as media during this pandemic.
Now, these were civilians who were throwing these rocks. Did police intervene at all to stop them?
So the roadblock that we faced were just done by civilians. Police had left by then because I think by then they were chasing Bobi Wine. So the roadblock that we encountered was made by civilians, and throughout the day, on our way back to the main town, which is Jinja, there was a lot of civilian roadblocks, which is just stones across the road. And it was civilians that would tell you, yes, are you coming through or not? But just to put this clear, this was the first time that I've had problems with civilians. Normally it is police that is the one that are interrupting our job. So this is the first encounter I've had with civilians themselves having a problem with journalists. So yeah, that was quite a shock for all of us in the car.
This isn't the first attack on media in Uganda in recent weeks. What are some of the other incidents that have taken place?
Over the past 3 weeks, let's say, journalists have been specifically targeted by authorities. We had a case of a videographer that was shot just below the eye with a rubber bullet. Myself and another journalist have been targeted as CIA spies on social media by the UPDF, which is the Ugandan military. They've put our photos up on Twitter and called us CIA spies. Also, a lot of journalists, a few journalists, especially the ones that were covering Bobi Wine, they were actually dragged out of their car by police. Lots of other occasions we've had that we have to get on the ground with our hands up when it's just journalists, not even protesters or Bobi Wine people or whatever. And you have SFC, which is the security forces, and police tear gassing us straight away and pepper spraying us as journalists.
And have the Ugandan authorities explained why they're doing this?
Ugandan authorities haven't really owned up to the fact that they're targeting journalists. When we went back to the prison where Bobi Wine was being held, reportedly, one of the main guys from the prison came out and told us, we don't want to fight you, but we will if you stay around, basically saying you're not safe as a journalist and we're going to mess you up if you stay. As an association for Foreign Correspondents Association of Uganda, we have sent out letters, especially in the beginning of this week, condemning all the attacks on journalists, both local and international. We haven't had any response from any authorities, so that's really been an issue. So it hasn't really been addressed. So basically, the targeting towards journalists has not been addressed, and the UPDF-linked people on Twitter and social media especially have been personally targeting both international and local journalists throughout the last 3 weeks.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us, Sumi, and stay safe.
Thank you so much, Jason.
That was Sumi Sadurni, a journalist currently in Jinja, Uganda. Back to you, Jackson.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Self-proclaimed prophet and church leader Shepherd Bushiri has surrendered to police in Malawi, where he had fled. Bushiri is wanted on charges of theft and money laundering in South Africa. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Bushiri and his wife Mary fled from South Africa to Malawi last week, violating bail conditions that were set after he was arrested in connection with a multi-million dollar money laundering case. Bushiri turned himself in to police Wednesday in Lilongwe. Police spokesperson James Kadadzela said the arrest was in response to a warrant of arrest issued by the International Police Organization, Interpol.
And it actually stated that the two are on trial in South Africa and are believed to have absconded their bail conditions. So we launched a manhunt yesterday, and we are sure that the couple got wind of the news that the police are looking for them. And we have them in our custody.
Kadadzela said police were taking statements from the couple, but did not know when they would appear before the court. Bushiri is a self-proclaimed prophet and leader of his Enlightened Christian Church Gathering, which claims over 70 branches worldwide. In South Africa, he and his wife and two others are accused of stealing $6.6 million through theft, money laundering, and fraud. A spokesperson for Bushiri, Ephraim Nyondo, explained the reason Bushiri fled to Malawi. He says what the prophet wants is to have a fair trial in South Africa. There hasn't been an indication of him having a fair trial there. Bushiri's escape coincided with President Lazarus Chakwera's official visit to South Africa last week, which fueled suspicions that the president was part of Bushiri's exit plan. This led to a diplomatic spat when Chakwera's flight was detained at Watercroft Air Force Base on Friday, the same day the fugitives failed to report on police bail. Sherif Kaisi is a political science lecturer at Blantyre University. He told VOA that Bushiri's arrest should end the diplomatic spat.
We should not spoil that which is big because of just a single person, because Malawi is not going to benefit anything by protecting, for example, an individual and putting the whole system of the country in jeopardy.
Meanwhile, a rights group, the Malawi Black Economic Empowerment Movement, said Wednesday that Malawi should not extradite Bushiri and his wife back to South Africa unless the government ensures they will receive a fair trial. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
After thousands of Nigerians took to the streets in mass protest against police brutality, the Nigerian police force announced that it had disbanded the unit. However, observers say that now authorities appear to be clamping down on activists who participated in the NSAS protests. Samuel Okocha reports from Lagos that civil society organizations accusing the government of targeting and intimidating many of the NSAS activists around the country.
Last week, a coalition of civil society organizations accused the government of hunting down rights activists and voices calling for systemic reforms following the NSAS protests. Human Rights Watch say Nigerian authorities appear to have used coercive financial measures to suppress protests against police brutality and independent media reporting. There are also growing concerns among ordinary citizens like Onemene Adene over a government-backed clampdown on protesters.
He was just a normal protester, so that's all that he did. That's the reason they picked him up, because he was involved in the NSAS protests.
Onemene Adene has been campaigning for the release of her brother, Eremosele. She says her brother was picked up in their house over a fictitious claim bordering on internet crime, but believes the police arrested his brother because of his involvement in the NSAS protests.
He has been with them for 1 week. What we are hearing is, don't charge him with cyber terrorism because he studied computer technology in school. For heaven's sakes, he has gone to school how many years ago? There was no NSAS protest then. There was no end police brutality protest then. So what he studied in school how many years ago have to do with what is on ground now? If you have proof of your claims, then take him to court. If you don't have proof of your claims and you know you're just trying to rope him in, then just release him.
President Muhammadu Buhari has since called for an end to the NSAS protests, saying the outcries over police brutality are receiving the needed response from the government. But on the streets of Lagos, residents are expressing mixed feelings.
There's no changes at all. We still keep on experiencing the same thing that we want the government to end.
The road is free now. There's no police on the road. They are not out yet. Due to the fact that some stations were burnt down, so they are not out yet.
If you can see now, you can't have trouble now to say you want to report. Who do you want to report to? No police, no security, danger everywhere. So government, we're calling on you to find a solution to all the problems on ground, especially this police over stuff.
Meanwhile, Onemene Adene has one thing on her mind: the freedom of our brother from police custody.
Please, we're begging, please release our brother to us. His social media buzz has been fantastic. #FreeRoms, #FreeRomOsele. We will continue to push until they release our brother to us.
Samuel Okocha, VOA News, Lagos, Nigeria.
In Kenya, the government is launching a national integrated identity management system, locally known as Huduma Number. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenyans now have 1 year to collect the cards, and they will not be able to access any government services without it from December of next year, 2021.
Speaking in Kiambu County, Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i explained how Huduma Card will be of great impact to Kenyans as far as service delivery is concerned.
Our president decided that one way to liberate Kenyans is to create an electronic platform where all information about our people is found. And with one card, your details are available. That is why it's called a single source of truth. Because this card now, it has a QR code and it has a microchip here. If I went to a hospital today and I wanted to be served and I've registered in NHIF, the hospital can use a QR code and they will read my NHIF details. Because all the intention of government is to create this single source of truth so that all your information can be found and carried in one card. This makes it easier for service provision.
Cabinet Secretary for Information and Communication Technology, Joe Musheru, who presided over a similar launch in Machakos County, stated that in view of COVID-19 prevention and control protocols, Kenyans will be notified via a short message when and where to pick the cards. He added that those who will receive the messages will have 1 month to pick up their cards.
Kutoka December 1, tutatumia watu SMS.
On 1st December, we'll send people short messages when their card is ready for collection with details of where to collect within a period of 1 month. All government offices and businesses must begin putting this technology into action. The card will contain a QR code which can be scanned with the smartphone for information. We will start with 2 million people in December, 3 million people in January, and 5 million in February.
January, tutakuwa na watu milioni tatu. February, milioni tano.
A section of Kenyans are impressed by the Huduma card service, citing that it is more convenient than carrying many documents and it will also help to curb corruption in government offices. Joseph Ochieng is a university student in Nairobi.
I'm so happy about the Huduma card number, and I would like to thank the government for this endeavor. Since initially we used to carry a lot of documents, including your ID, your NHIF card, and SSF, but now all these documents have been consolidated into one Huduma card number, which will assist you to acquire government services in every public office. Also, it's going to help in curbing corruption, since files used to get lost and you had to pay something before your file could be gotten. But now, at least you can, all your files can be retrieved from only one card.
The current national identification cards will cease being in operation by December 2021, and no one in Kenya will be able to access government services without the Huduma card. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Dakar's second largest art event will be its first this year after the biennale was cancelled due to COVID-19. This year's Pat Cools looks to fill the gap. The annual art event has added four new venues this year, one of which is a new gallery called Celebe Yun. The gallery's founder, Jennifer Hudrug, spoke to reporter Ricky Shryok about the first big art event of the year in Senegal's capital.
Celebe Yun is a new venue dedicated to contemporary art, located at the center of Dakar. The word Celebe Yun means the crossroads, the place where different paths intersect. And having worked in New York for the last 5 years and having also worked here in Dakar, the idea of Celebe Yun is to be a hybrid space that is really at the crossroad of a gallery and a residency, and that can welcome artists from different geographies, international artists, and as well as artists from the continent. The concept is for it to be a platform for artistic experimentation and expression.
And I believe your first event is part of the Parkour art event in Dakar, is that correct?
Yes, exactly. So, so the first time Celebe Yun will open will be on the occasion of the Parkour, which is the second most important event dedicated to contemporary art in Dakar.
So you mentioned it, it's opening with the Parkour as the second biggest art event in Dakar, but it's second to the Biennale, which didn't happen this year. So it must be, you know, how do you view this Parkour this year as quite an important event, given Dakar's biggest art event didn't get to happen because of COVID?
Yes, exactly. I think a lot of artists and a lot of cultural actors are very excited about the Parkour because it's been 1 year almost now of silence so for art events, and since the biennial that didn't happen, I think a lot of big projects are happening this time. And what is interesting is that compared to last year's Parkour, there's four additional venues that are participating, amongst which Celebe Yun.
That is Jennifer Hudrouj. She was speaking to our reporter Ricky Shryok in Dakar, Senegal. And that's it for this Thursday, November 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndumbulu and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important after news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.